Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, April 1st, 2020. Coming up this hour.
Global stocks tumble as the outlook for the coronavirus outbreak looks increasingly grim.
We're going through the worst thing that the country's probably ever seen.
Deaths in the U.S. climbed to 3,800, while one study predicts 240,000 total fatalities from the virus.
New York City has passed the 1,000 death toll from COVID-19. Plus, Joe Biden doubts the Democratic National Convention will happen as planned. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. NFL owners have approved expanded playoffs starting in 2020, and tennis's Patrick McEnroe has tested positive for coronavirus.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Take the bond challenge by using the free IBKR bond scanner to compare available yields against those of your broker. Learn more at ibkr.com/bonds.
And U.S. futures are falling as the outlook for the coronavirus pandemic worsens. 601 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 69 points this morning. Dow futures down 575. NASDAQ futures down 178. The DAX in Germany is down 2.8%. CAC in Paris down 3.1%. And the FTSE 100 down 3.2%. 10-year Treasury up 19/32nds, yield 0.60%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.22%. COMEX gold is up 0.7% or $11.50 at 16.08.30 an ounce. The euro 1.0935 against the dollar. The yen is at 107.62. Nathan.
Well, Karen, when it comes to the fallout from the coronavirus pandemic, the tone we are hearing from President Trump is turning increasingly grim.
This could be a hell of a bad 2 weeks. This is going to be a very bad 2 and maybe even 3 weeks. This is going to be 3 weeks like we haven't seen before.
The president says the reality of the pandemic is shocking after the latest projections for the scope of death and suffering across the country.
This is really easy to be negative about, but I want to give people hope, too. You know, I'm a cheerleader for the country. We're going through the worst thing that the country's probably ever seen.
The latest projection from the University of Washington predicts the death toll will spike to almost 60,000 this month. Fatalities will then plateau in May and June, eventually totaling about 84,000 by August.
One White House projection puts total deaths from the virus at 240,000. The base case, however, is a little less dire. Deborah Birx is the top health official coordinating the virus response.
100,000 to 200,000. We think that that is the range. We really believe and hope every day that we can do a lot better than that.
The projection calls for U.S. deaths to peak April 15th, 2 weeks from now. At that stage, 2,200 Americans are expected to die each day.
Well, infections continue to surge across the country with 187,000 confirmed cases and 3,800 fatalities. For the very latest, we bring in Bloomberg's John Tucker live in New York. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Nathan. Deaths in New York City have now topped 1,000. New York State accounts for 40% of all infections, with more than 75,000. And Governor Andrew Cuomo says the peak is likely still weeks away.
It is not going to be soon. If our apex is 14 to 21 days, that's our apex. You then have to come down the other side of the mountain once you hit the apex. So calibrate yourself and your expectations so you're not disappointed every morning you get up.
Cases in New York State now exceed the total number in Hubei province. That's where the virus began. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Worldwide, confirmed cases number more than 860,000, with a death toll exceeding 42,000. Fatalities continue to climb across Europe, and here with the very latest is Bloomberg's Ewan Potts, live from our London bureau. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Here in the UK, the number of confirmed coronavirus-related deaths is now close to 1,800, a one-day jump of more than 380. Top officials now accept that Britain has not done enough to test the population, and in particular to test medical workers. Over in France, almost 500 deaths reported yesterday, bringing the total there to more than 3,500. Spain, meanwhile, suffered its deadliest day of the pandemic with more than 860 deaths in a 24-hour period. But better news from the epicenter of the virus in Europe. New cases in Italy have leveled off at a two-week low. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Right, thanks for that, Ewan. Meantime, in Asia, the virus continues to linger. South Korea is reporting 100 new cases. Infections in Japan are also on the rise. And a second wave of cases in Hong Kong has the city closing entertainment venues. Those concerns helped push stocks in Asia lower overnight. Joining us now with details is Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Japan's Nikkei 225 closed lower by 4.5% in Tokyo as the latest Tankan survey showed confidence at Japan's biggest companies plunged in March. South Korea's Kospi index fell almost 4% in Seoul. Data showing exports stalled in March as the pandemic hit supply chains and suppressed global demand. In Hong Kong, shares in UK banks HSBC and Standard Chartered tumbled after they scrapped dividend payments. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. And those scrap dividend payments have banks leading declines for stocks in Europe today. We get more on the fallout now from Bloomberg's Brian Curtis.
HSBC warned that revenue and loan losses would be impaired in the first quarter. It canceled an interim dividend slated for the end of this month. No payouts or any buybacks, it said, until at least the end of this year. Other banks followed suit after being urged to do so by UK regulators. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thanks. We'll get insight into the U.S. banking sector today from Brian Moynihan, the Bank of America CEO, sits down for an exclusive interview at 12:30 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Oil trading near $20 a barrel as demand is expected to plummet even further this month. We spoke with Goldman Sachs head of commodities research, Jeff Currie, who said the unprecedented drop in demand could cripple the industry for years.
96% of the world's GDP currently has some type of social distancing measure in place. The impact in oil is far greater than the economic impact because oil is the cornerstone to social interactions and globalization.
And checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate crude is trading at $20.27 a barrel. That's down 1% or 20 cents. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 6:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here with more on the response to the coronavirus in the world's epicenter now, the United States. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Hard-hit New York City is parking refrigerated morgue trucks on the streets to collect the dead as it battles the coronavirus. The death toll in the city has passed 1,000. New York is setting up hospitals at convention centers and sports complexes and bringing in medical workers. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says they still need coordinated help to secure enough life-saving ventilators.
So you have 50 states competing to buy the same item. We all wind up bidding up each other and competing against each other, where you now literally will have a company call you up and say, well, California just outbid you. It's like being on eBay.
An Amazon worker in New York City says he was fired for what he calls retaliation for staging an employee walkout over coronavirus concerns. Mayor Bill de Blasio says that employee's termination has become an issue of great concern.
The allegation is because he spoke up for the safety of his fellow workers, he was fired. I have ordered the city's Commission on Human Rights to investigate Amazon immediately to determine if that's true. If so, that would be a violation of our city human rights law. We would act on it immediately.
An Amazon spokesperson says the worker was fired for violating safety procedures by not following company social distancing guidelines, and he had received multiple warnings. A Southern California nursing home has been slammed by COVID-19. San Bernardino County authorities say 51 residents and 6 staff members of a Yucaipa nursing home had the virus, and 2 residents have died. Former Vice President Joe Biden says he doubts the Democratic National Convention will take place as planned this July in Milwaukee because of the coronavirus outbreak. The Democratic presidential frontrunner spoke to MSNBC.
We should listen to the scientists. And, you know, one of the reasons why the Democratic convention was going to be held early was the Olympics were coming after the Republican convention. There is more time now.
President Trump said that the Republican National Convention slated for the end of August would go forward. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It is 6:09 on Wall Street, and John Stashower is back with the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nathan. The NFL draft, one thing that is on, it's going to start 3 weeks from tomorrow without all the fanfare. The Giants have the fourth pick. Their GM, Dave Gettleman, will presumably make the decision, but reportedly Gettleman could be going into his final year on the job if the Giants don't show significant improvement in 2020. They got the NFL's worst record over the last 3 years. They just made a coaching change. GM could be the next to go. There's been a lot of what would have been going on now if not for the virus. And NFL owners would have held their spring meeting at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach. Instead, they had a 32-way conference call. They approved expanding the playoffs to 14 teams starting right away in 2020. So one team in each conference gets a bye, not two. There will be three wild card games in each conference, up from two. There'll be a triple header on Saturday and another one on Sunday. Patrick McEnroe tested positive for COVID-19, 53-year-old native New Yorker, of course, John's younger brother, former Davis Cup captain, longtime tennis broadcaster. He spoke with TMZ.
There's a lot of people that are having a hard time, and unfortunately, we're seeing the numbers go up of, you know, people that have lost their lives. So I consider myself extremely lucky, but I also consider myself probably a similar situation to what most people are going through. Okay, which is that you get it, you have some mild symptoms, and your body's able to successfully fight it off. So that's what I've been able to do.
McEnroe's been self-quarantined at his home in Westchester the past 10 days. The Chinese Basketball Association shut down in January. Now its scheduled return has been delayed. No timetable set. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Okay, John, thanks. And other sports news sources tell us sports streaming startup DAZN is telling leagues it's not going to pay them for any games that have been canceled during the coronavirus outbreak. The decision by DAZN, which has committed billions of dollars to baseball and football, marks a controversial break from tradition. Leagues rely heavily on money from broadcasters. They've been able to lean on their media partners in the past during stoppages in play. S&P futures lower by 70 points. Dow futures down 590. And NASDAQ futures a loss of 180 points. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Anshin. COVID-19 impacts your business, and Anshin accountants and advisors are here to help navigate the growing relief and resources available to your business. Visit Anshin.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures are falling with S&P futures down 70 points this morning. Dow futures down 584 and NASDAQ futures down 179. The DAX in Germany is down 3%. 10-year Treasury up 21 30 seconds. Yield 0.60%. Yield on the 2-year 0.23%. And NYMEX crude oil down 0.2% or 4 cents at $20.45 a barrel. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Donald Trump is urging Americans to heed his administration guidelines for responding to the coronavirus pandemic, calling it a matter of life and death. That includes social distancing. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with more on the COVID-19 crisis.
Michael, New York City's death toll topped 1,000. New York State's infections now exceed those reported in China's Hubei province, where the virus first emerged late last year. Deborah Birx, the top public health official coordinating the White House Coronavirus Task Force, says as many as 200,000 Americans are projected to die in the outbreak. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak. Michael.
Thank you very much, John. One of the world's busiest airports has lost more than half its traffic because of the coronavirus outbreak. Airport officials say flights at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International are down by about 60%. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We're coming up to 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and as we start to hear increasingly grim projections on how the coronavirus pandemic could play out in the U.S. over just the next couple of weeks, we welcome back to the program Dr. Andy Pekos, professor of molecular microbiology and immunology at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Good, as always, to get your insights, Dr. Pekos. Thanks for being with us. The projections we're hearing now call for anywhere from 80,000 to 240,000 deaths by the time this is over. What are you seeing as Johns Hopkins continues to track the spread of this virus around the world? How could the scenario play out?
Well, you know, there's encouraging data from places that have implemented public health interventions to try to limit the spread of the virus. And so I think that some of these efforts are working. They're turning or flattening the curve, as people say, in some parts of the country. So I think the message is that everybody has to pull together and adopt these measures and really take them seriously, because they will make a difference, and they'll end up putting us at the lower end of those projections if we can effectively implement them throughout the country.
You say some parts of the country. Are there parts of the country that are worrisome for you right now?
Well, you know, because the United States is so large, what we're seeing is these outbreaks occurring in different cities, and they're at different timings in terms of how the epidemic is progressing. So you've got places like Washington, state of Washington, and New York City, which are much further away down the pathway of this epidemic than other cities in the country. And so we have to make sure that individuals are paying attention to their local environment and what their local public health individuals are saying, and responding in appropriate ways to how the virus is spreading in their areas. And that's the most effective way to implement some of these interventions.
Is a local piece-by-piece approach going to be effective in the weeks and months to come, or does there need to be more of a federal response, more federal oversight of how this is playing out?
You know, one of the most important roles right now for the federal government is to help allocate resources appropriately. You know, I think we're in a situation where we don't have enough resources to give every single hospital in the nation everything that they need at one particular time. So there has to be a plan in place to make sure that resources are moving to places where they're needed, and that is best done at the federal level.
What's the most effective plan look like for you? Does it call for using the Defense Production Act, some other tool that might be at the federal government's disposal?
Yeah, you know, we really need to make sure to address two things. Ensure that testing is widely available, because testing is a best way for us to really keep track of how the virus is moving and make sure that we are implementing the appropriate public health interventions. And two is to make sure that our healthcare workers and our caregivers have enough personal protective gear to make sure that those transmission chains are stopped and that we don't see the virus moving into those populations.
Where do you stand on some of these fast-track tests that are coming out from companies like Abbott Labs? Are they showing effectiveness?
There's two types of tests that are now coming out. There's the tests that tell you if you're infected right now, and that's some of the tests like the Abbott one that you referred to. The more tests that are available, the better off we'll be, because that increases our capacity for doing tests. The second class of tests that are now coming out are these antibody tests that tell you if you've ever been infected. And there'll be a place for that later in the epidemic, but right now we really have to focus on testing people who are potentially infected and doing that as effectively as possible.
We've seen evidence of hospitals growing beyond capacity, the surge of patients really taxing resources. Is there more that can be done to keep hospitals ahead of where this pandemic could be going?
Well, again, planning is important here. I know that at least here at Johns Hopkins, the entire research community and hospital community is pulled together to try to make sure that everybody is chipping in any way possible, to make sure that the capacity here at the hospital is expanded and that our healthcare workers are being given all the tools that they need to do their jobs effectively.
Are we seeing new evidence of effective treatments? We've seen the Food and Drug Administration fast-track approvals for some treatments like hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin. Where are we in terms of treatments?
Yeah, so there are a number of clinical trials that are being set up at multiple medical institutions across the country to try to give us data as to how effective these treatments are. And that's really the critical thing, is we have to make sure that even though there's a rush to put in place things that can help our infected individuals, we need to make sure that we're doing things that are using treatments that are effective. And those trials are in place. There's been an incredibly large network of communication about these trials. So I fully expect that as soon as institutions start seeing either positive or negative results with these treatments, that information will be distributed very quickly.
Thank you, Doctor, for the work you're doing. We appreciate your insights. Dr. Andy Pekosh, Professor of Molecular Microbiology and Immunology at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Get the latest on the coronavirus pandemic on the Bloomberg Terminal, VRUS Go, and there's more at Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's Donor Advised Fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Open a JCF fund now to lock in a 2020 tax deduction. Visit jcfny.org.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are following global stocks lower as the outlook for the coronavirus outbreak looks increasingly grim.
This could be a hell of a bad 2 weeks. This is going to be a very bad 2 and maybe even 3 weeks. This is going to be 3 weeks like we haven't seen before.
The president said the reality of the pandemic is shocking after the latest projections for the scope of death and suffering across the country.
This is really easy to be negative about, but I want to give people hope, too. You know, I'm a cheerleader for the country. We're going through the worst thing that the country's probably ever seen.
Predictions on the outbreak are turning more pessimistic. Let's get the latest numbers now live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Well, Nathan, the White House projection puts total U.S. deaths from the virus at 240,000. The base case may be a little less dire. Deborah Birx is the top health official coordinating the virus response.
100,000 to 200,000. We think that that is the range. We really believe and hope every day that we can do a lot better than that.
The projection calls for U.S. deaths to peak April 15th, 2 weeks from now. At that stage, 2,200 Americans expected to die each day from COVID-19. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you. Global stocks are tumbling as the pandemic impacts corporate profits and dividends. In Europe, HSBC and Standard Chartered are halting buybacks and dividends, and that has banks leading declines for stocks in Europe.
Well, back here in the U.S., we expect grim data from payroll provider ADP today. Economists forecast a decline of 150,000 private payrolls in March. Here with more is Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice.
Today's ADP report will illustrate the initial impact of the virus outbreak on America's labor market. Based on last week's jobless claims data, we know unemployment, according to some forecasts, could reach 10%, the peak of the last recession. Bloomberg Economics says there's evidence social distancing is especially hard on smaller firms with limited resources, lines of credit, the ability to work at home. Looking ahead, Thursday's jobless claims could match last week's record of more than 3 million. Friday, the government issues its March payroll report. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinnie, thank you. S&P futures are down about 77 points. Dow futures down 640. NASDAQ futures down 197. The 10-year Treasury up 18/32nds, yield 0.61%. The yield on the 2-year at 0.23%. NYMEX crude oil is now higher, up a third of a percent or 7 cents at $20.55 a barrel. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It's 6:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on the local and national response to COVID-19. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says coronavirus is more dangerous than officials in his state first thought. Cuomo, during his daily news conference, says that cases are still on the rise, and they don't know when the curve will peak.
If our apex is 14 to 21 days, that's our apex. You then have to come down the other side of the mountain once you hit the apex. So calibrate yourself and your expectations so you're not disappointed every morning you get up.
The death toll from the coronavirus pandemic has surpassed 1,000 in New York City. Meanwhile, the city's overwhelmed health system embraced the arrival of hundreds of paramedics, EMTs, and ambulances. In New Jersey, there are almost 18,700 COVID-19 cases with 267 deaths. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy.
The way we win this war is to break the back
of the virus, flatten that curve as aggressively as possible, basically shut the state down, but for essential services, as we have done now for weeks.
Meanwhile, Connecticut has more than 3,100 virus cases with 69 deaths. The nation's top infectious disease doctor says the U.S. needs to keep up social distancing efforts. Dr. Anthony Fauci of the White House says there are two opposing forces, the virus and what we are doing about it.
The 15 days that we had of mitigation clearly have had an effect, although it's tough to quantitate it because of those two opposing forces. But the reason why we feel so strongly about the necessity of the additional 30 days is that now is the time, whenever you're having an effect, not to take your foot off the accelerator.
Joe Biden expressed doubts that the Democratic National Convention could go on as planned this July in Milwaukee, citing continued concerns about containing the coronavirus outbreak. The Democratic National Committee has been exploring contingency options for the convention, but it has not made any final decisions. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time again for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashower. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nathan. The NFL says the league has been told there's no reason to believe their season won't be able to start on time. In September, NFL VP Jeff Pasch adds that if for some reason it doesn't, the plan would still be to play 16 games and then a 14-team playoff tournament. That's up from 12 teams. The NFL officially approved that yesterday. When and if the NBA returns, it's almost certainly going to be without fans, which begs the question, why bother playing at a team's home arena? Reportedly, the league considering having all the games played at the same arena, multiple games perhaps day and night, unless there'd be no travel for players and officials. Las Vegas, which has a lot of hotel space, considered to be the likeliest host. The NBA says it will push back its draft until when and if the season ends. After Kevin Durant and three Nets teammates tested positive, the Lakers all got tested. They were the last team the Nets played. There was a report that two Lakers tested positive. Lakers now say all their players are symptom-free and they were quarantined for 2 weeks. The Celtics' Marcus Smart, now symptom-free, the virus says he plans to donate blood so it can be studied with the hope of finding a treatment. Add Patrick McEnroe, the former tennis pro, longtime tennis broadcaster, to the list of those who have tested positive. About a year and a half ago, Tiger Woods played Phil Mickelson for $9 million. Winner take all, Phil won. Now Mickelson admits there are talks about another match. He responded to a tweet that suggested that they play and have it streamed, and the tweet ended with, "We need sports," and Mickelson responded, "We're looking into it." John Stashel, Bloomberg Sports. David?
Okay, John, thank you. It is 6:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
The advice is simple and universal. Washing your hands with soap and water is one of the most effective ways to stop the spread of the coronavirus. But for millions of the most vulnerable across the country, that's not simple at all. They lack running water because they can't afford it, and their service has been shut off. Advocacy groups and elected officials are pushing for federal legislation and fast action to protect people facing high water bills and shutoffs amid the crisis. According to one 2016 estimate, as many as 15 million Americans go through a water shutoff each year. By one recent account, close to 100 cities and states have acted to pause water shutoffs for those unable to pay their bills, but in many other places, the service cutoffs go on. Mary Grant of the group Food and Water Watch says going to court or some other extraordinary action shouldn't be required for vital water service during a dangerous pandemic. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Okay, Bob, thanks. 6:38 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Netflix is watching as Instagram unites a quarantined world. I'm Tara LaChapelle, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Having our normal daily lives upended by the pandemic has heightened the demand for entertainment, but not just Netflix. We're increasingly looking for content that provides some semblance of human connection. There's something comforting about scrolling through friends' Instagram posts and watching silly TikTok dances, and even seeing live videos of how celebrities are passing the time while stuck home just like the rest of us. It shows that what's missing from Netflix and other TV services is the ability to interact with one another. Many of us already scroll social media on our phones while watching TV. In the future, studio-produced content may be found right alongside user-generated content. Netflix could look a bit like Instagram and vice versa. The future of streaming just might be social. I'm Tara LaChapelle. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. Xerox is ending its hostile takeover bid for HP. The company says the move is tied to uncertainty stemming from the coronavirus. And here with more is Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
It marks a blow to the photocopier company's efforts to stimulate future growth. A source familiar with the issue, who asked not to be identified, says Xerox believes the underlying logic behind a combination does remain sound and could revisit the idea in the future. HP, the world's second-largest computer maker, repeatedly turned down Xerox's cash and stock offers, most recently valued at an estimated $35 billion. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Charlie, thank you. And equity investors just witnessed the worst quarterly plunge since the financial crisis, and some expect even more losses to come. Oaktree Capital co-founder Howard Marks says the range of negative outcomes right now is wider than the financial crisis. Jeffrey Gundlach of Double Line Capital says the S&P 500 will likely reach new lows this month. And veteran investor Jim Rogers expects the worst bear market in his life over the next few years. Futures are pointing to a lower open, with S&P futures down 76 points, Dow futures lower by 643, NASDAQ futures a loss of 204 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's just before 641 on Wall Street. Just ahead, we'll look at presidential leadership during this fight against a rapidly spreading pandemic. Brown University political science chair Wendy Schiller is back with us next. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. S&P futures down 80 points this morning. Dow futures falling 671 and NASDAQ futures down 207. The DAX in Germany is down 3.4%. 10-year Treasury up 20, 30 seconds. Yield 0.60%. The yield on the 2-year 0.23%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.7% or 14 cents at $20.61 a barrel. And COMEX gold up 0.7% or $10.40 at $16.07 an ounce. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Donald Trump is urging Americans to heed his administration's guidelines for responding to the coronavirus pandemic, calling it a matter of life and death. The president's warning came with new projections that there could be 100,000 to 240,000 deaths in the U.S. even if social distancing guidelines are maintained. Public health officials stressed that the number could be less if people bear down on keeping their distance from one another. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. We're at 648 on Wall Street, and now it's time to check what's going on in D.C., where the coronavirus fight, of course, remains front and center. Among the top stories, the White House says it will not reopen Obamacare exchanges during the pandemic. President Trump is preparing to delay tariff payments for some businesses by 90 days as the outbreak continues to play out. And Joe Biden is now saying he doubts the Democratic National Convention will go on as scheduled in Milwaukee this July. The top story, though, is the marked shift in tone we're hearing from the president, now warning of a painful 2 weeks ahead, maybe even 3 weeks, in the face of dire projections over the coronavirus. Wendy Schiller is back with us this morning, chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. It was striking to hear from the president last night saying that we could be in for a really rough 2 to 3 weeks. What do you make of the president's response to the outbreak so far and the shift that we are seeing from him?
Well, I mean, I think most people welcome the shift, right? Because he's not, you know, he said nice things about the governor of Michigan yesterday, apparently breaching that gap, that fight that they were having. Partly that's, of course, to help Michigan, just to help Michigan, but also because he needs to win Michigan to win re-election. So I think he's finally understanding that the more he helps these kinds of states that are really under siege, the better his chances in November. It's interesting there are two decisions not to reopen the Obamacare exchange. Since there are 12 or 14 states have already done that have their state-level exchanges. They're mostly Democratic states. So that's an interesting decision because there's a lot of people who are self-employed who don't have insurance, and I don't know where they're going to get their insurance. So that's an ideological decision about Obamacare. And the second thing is to issue rules to roll back Obama's environmental protections, particularly fuel standards for automobiles and trucks. So when you think about that, you see that, you know, the politics are still going on, that policy is still going on, and that there's a lot of pressure on the president to do all these things that are not particularly Republican, on the other hand, to use that bureaucracy that he's got control of to do some things that are typically Republican. So you're seeing politics continue despite this really unprecedented crisis.
Is there an impression still hanging out there that the president is focused too much on politics as opposed to the public health crisis playing out? It was only just a few days ago that the president was saying that many of his critics might be hoping that the outbreak is worse because it will hurt him in the polls.
Well, I mean, I do think that he's doing a balancing act and trying to control his own impulses, and sometimes he succeeds and sometimes he doesn't. But I think in the last, you know, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days, you know, he's running the country and responding to the crisis. And I think voters today would reward him for that. People are really terrified. I think he's gone from trying to be, don't be scared, to now really terrifying America about what can happen to get them to engage in social distancing. The real concern is, what do we do after the peak hits, after it subsides, after economies open up, and after people get out and try to resume life? The economic damage is so significant. And you sort of have to wonder whether the typical approach, you know, not opening up Obamacare, for example, or other things that Republicans generally have as an ideology, will be acceptable and sustainable when you have to resurrect the economy and resurrect people's lives. And that's just a big question mark. I'm not saying the Democrats have a better answer. I'm just saying that this is going to change politics, and both parties have to be ready for that. And it's just unclear to me that they are.
How do you see that change happening, and what do the parties need to do to adapt to that change?
Well, you know, the technology has been sort of eliminating lots of jobs and then creating lots of other jobs, right? That's the cycle we've been in, at least in the last couple of years. But you're going to look, I mean, estimates are that maybe as many as 20% of the people who lost their job aren't going to get it back. And so then you say to yourself, what do you do with all those people? Does the government retrain them? Does the government employ them? You know, how do you give businesses money to bring them back, even though they're maybe not necessary? You know, does this point out inefficiencies in the workplace that businesses will take advantage of? You know, how do you cope with that? And if you're a Republican and you're typically not interested in extending unemployment or doing worker training funded by the government, what's the answer? And a lot of those people voted for Trump, theoretically. You know, you can look around the country in certain states and say, oh, they voted for Trump. And are they going to vote for him again when there isn't any sort of venue for them to get back on their feet economically? That seems dubious to me. And I think the president will pivot if he has to. And that's going to create an interesting contrast within the Republican Party. And the Democrats are going to say, let's spend more money, but there isn't any more money to spend. So then what's the answer if you can't spend federal dollars? And we don't have a political class that has to, you know, really be innovative. They're not particularly young. You know, the average age of everybody in Congress is in their mid to late 50s or early 60s. And so how does somebody come up with the best ideas for the next iteration of the economy? And that to me is sort of the question mark. And I think people aren't scared about that now, but they are going to become pretty terrified about that in June, when they can at least go out the door and that they find that the world that they knew is gone. And that to me is the challenge.
In our last minute here, Wendy, we've heard Joe Biden say he's not thinking that it's likely, perhaps, that the Democratic convention will go off in July. There's more talk now about perhaps the November election being a mail-in vote. How could this change just the way the presidential vote happens in the next few months?
Well, that to me is sort of that to me seems inevitable, that if all these primaries have been postponed and they're going to happen mostly by mail, it just seems untenable for elected officials who are up for re-election themselves, in the state legislatures in particular, and a lot of governors, to say, okay, now you can't vote for the president by mail in November. Everything will be fine. That's not going to happen. People are going to insist on being able to vote by mail. The convention can happen in September. The question is whether Bernie Sanders decides to stick it out and cause division, or get out and help Biden. Or does somebody else jump in, like people have been saying, Andrew Cuomo, or somebody else? So that's a big question mark. But I see vote by mail extending across a lot of states, and that changes who will vote, how many people vote, and that changes the dynamic for, I think, both major party candidates.
Always good talking with you, Wendy. Thank you. Wendy Schiller is chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 6:54 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report with John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And Karen, every day we're checking in with small businesses to see how they're weathering the storm when it comes to the coronavirus outbreak. For many, business has ground to a halt. Andrew Shimaluski owns and operates Dave's Sweet Tooth in Harrison, Michigan. The company makes toffee from an old recipe that originated with his dad, a retired firefighter from Detroit. Andrew, how's your business holding up as we've seen this pandemic spread to Detroit in recent days?
So it's been pretty crazy. Nobody saw this coming. I don't think there's really any way to prepare for it. You know, we've had POs canceled from large customers. You know, our online business is thriving on, you know, on our website and on Amazon. So that direct-to-consumer piece, people getting stuff delivered to their houses, going well. And then the grocery business is going well. But the other outlets, you know, some of our large retailers have closed their doors completely because they're non-essential businesses. So that's really started to impact the bottom line pretty quickly here.
Now, have you found it necessary to try to apply for any aid from Small Business Administration or the like?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as soon as we heard that there was going to be aid available, you know, I've started filling out these applications and, you know, just seeing what kind of help we're going to be able to get. You know, we definitely are trying to keep our people busy and, you know, keep people employed, but we've got to stay safe at the same time. You know, obviously we're making food, so that's a huge priority for us.
Do you have enough of a cushion to sustain you for any length of time through this crisis?
We don't have a huge cushion. You know, we've got obviously POs that were shipped and money that's coming in that's owed to us. You know, our big concern is, are we going to get paid on those things? You know, we've already had one large retailer that's actually filed for bankruptcy because of this. So, you know, there's some lost revenue there that we'll probably never see. You know, the bigger thing for us has kind of been to go through with all of our partners, make sure that they know where we are, and see if there's any kind of deferments or forbearance that we can kind of take advantage of in order to make it through what I hope to be just another 30 to 60 days, you know, maybe 90 days, you know. It's not like we're sitting on a, you know, couple million dollars to just ride out the storm either, you know. It's definitely getting tight.
All right, Andrew Shimaluski owns and operates Dave's Sweet Tooth in Harrison, Michigan. Thanks. And the coming days and weeks, we'll continue to bring you stories of small businesses trying to survive in the face of COVID-19 right here on Bloomberg Daybreak. I'm John Tucker. That is your Bloomberg Small Business Report. Karen.
All right, John Tucker, thank you. S&P futures, they're down about 85 points this morning. Dow futures down 712. That's about 3.3%. And NASDAQ futures are down 223. The 10-year Treasury up 19/32. The yield 0.60%. And the yield on the 2-year is at 0.22%. NYMEX crude oil rising up 0.4%. Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.